there.
Yep.
So, you know, in his defense, they probably don't need like five gaffers for that segment.
They just need to get his dad naked on the toilet and slapping the crap out of him. And with that being said, welcome back, everybody, to Dying to Talk episode. What episode is this? 16?
15?
I don't even know anymore. We record these bi-weekly, which I want to stop doing because it's fucking me up tremendously. I'm like, oh yeah, shit, 2 weeks have gone by. I got to get this new episode out. I just need to start doing it weekly. Don't you agree?
In a way, this is episode one.
This is the pilot. This is the pilot. We're restarting season three, episode one. We got a very special guest today on this season blank episode, whatever, who, if anybody's fucking keeping count, we got Austin Abbott in the fucking house today. Austin, how you doing?
Hey, doing swell.
Doing swell. How you doing? You look very, like, you look youthful with this outfit, man. Striped shirt and the ball cap. Like,
you know, I'm trying to reconnect with the youth. I've been looking up fashion tips.
Yeah.
Recently, I heard about ankle socks, that you're not supposed to wear no-show socks
ankle
anymore.
Ankle socks are dead, bro.
Yeah, so I was wearing high socks with my shorts the other day. It was very fashionable. Yeah. People were asking my age. I was getting ID'd everywhere I went.
That's what I'm doing. Ankle socks, like, they fell off for me, bro. Like, I just can't do it. Like, that just feels unsafe for
me.
Like, why?
It's vulnerable.
Why are my ankles out? Yeah. And I skate, too, so, like, ankle socks is, like, you're just asking to get absolutely sliced in the ankle. My brother still wears ankle socks.
Yikes.
Yeah. Dork.
Embarrassing. Couldn't be me.
You ever play Earthbound?
No.
The main character in Earthbound. Anybody know what I'm talking about? Earthbound. You ever play Smash Bros? Ness? Isn't he dressed like Ness? We'll put a picture up on the screen. Anyway, how's your week been going? I haven't seen you in a while. It's been a minute.
It's been a minute. It's been good. I've been traveling, been busy. I was in Chicago for 18 hours this week.
Damn.
That was interesting.
Dude put in two shifts. What were you doing in Chicago?
Day job.
Nice.
Where I travel and set up for event stuff. Mm-hmm. So I went to Chicago, went to a conference room, and then flew back.
Nice.
It's beautiful.
Hell yeah.
Actually, I'll tell you, this is an interesting fact.
Oh.
Chicago right now is in the midst of a historic cicada infestation.
Really? Is it been, I think, what is it, how many years when cicadas come back?
So I don't know what their like routine is. Uh-huh. All I know is my friend was at a Godzilla versus Mothra screening in Chicago.
That's fucking
last night. And there was a bug guy there, obviously, because it's Mothra.
Yeah.
And he was talking about the cicada infestation.
Wait, was he a bug? Was he a bug guy by trade or by, like, was he dressed as a bug?
So there were many people dressed as a bug.
I'd imagine.
This guy was a bug guy by trade.
Okay.
You could just tell. Like, you look at him, you're like, this guy knows.
This guy loves insects. Yeah, you can look at somebody and go, insect.
You just know.
Fan, avid insect fan for sure.
But he said it's like the most or the widest or whatever the terminology is in 221 years.
Holy shit.
So I walked out of this building and it was like screeching with cicadas. It was incredible. I looked like I was tripping because I stood there for like 5 minutes recording the sound of it because I was so captivated.
All the locals are like, this guy, we've been here for weeks, bro. Get fucking used to it. I remember the cicadas first, like when I remember them first spawning in, I was in like late middle school and it was just like terrifying. I was like, this is terrible.
It feels biblical.
It does.
Yeah.
It feels like we did something wrong and God is punishing us.
Yeah.
I don't know what that is, but are you a fan of Godzilla?
Godzilla? Films? Oh yeah, huge fan. I mean, hell yeah, dude.
Who's your favorite kaiju?
Wow. I don't know. This is tough.
Biollante is my favorite.
I mean,
it's just so cool. It's a fucking plant person that turns into a big rose and is also like super devastating. People say like, oh, Rodan or like, what's the robot one?
Oh.
With the curve.
Yeah, yeah.
All the Godzilla fans listening are screaming.
I mean, this is
terrible.
It's so embarrassing. I
mean,
there's Mechagodzilla, there's Ultraman.
Ultraman.
I feel so ashamed.
What the fuck is the dude's name with the, he's got like the visor, bro. He looks tough as shit with the visor.
This is embarrassing.
It's not Rodan. It's like another Ghidra? No.
Oh, I think it's Dennis.
Right.
Yeah.
Dennis Quaid, I believe, plays him in the live action film. Anyway, opening segment, Austin. Fuck, are you ready?
I mean, this is huge.
Whose pants are these? Austin, whose pants are these?
I'm wearing Gap.
Yo, let's fuck.
So
ugh,
for the listener,
First
time Mike and I met,
yeah,
we were wearing the exact same pair of pants.
We sure were.
From Gap, and we talked about our methodology of pant buying.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very similar. Mm. These ones, I actually did not. So my methodology is I usually go to Gap once every like 18 months.
Wow.
Go to the clearance section. Okay. And buy two pairs of pants.
Just two?
Yeah.
All right.
But I actually bought these full price.
Wow.
Yeah. So this
are you
was,
balling like that?
I mean, things are looking up. So I bought a full price pair of pants. I mean, Gap is always like, you know, store-wide sale because they're, you know, what's it called? Bankrupt like constantly. So full price at Gap is still only like $40.
Yeah. Max.
It was huge though. It was huge.
Damn, dude. Did you get one of those like weird Gap Disney collab shirts with those pants too? Fuck. I'm wearing Old Navy shorts.
Nice.
Got these at the Woodbury Commons like a few weeks ago. Me and my lady, she goes, you should get these shorts. I bet they look good on you. I was like, I don't know. I don't have a lot of confidence, as you could probably guess. But I don't know. I stepped out of the dressing room in these fucking bad boys and I was like, ooh, a little upper leg action, above the knee.
What do we got? 7-inch?
I 7-inch.
Nothing better.
My pants are the the shorts are 7 inches, me about half on a good day. These are like $7 though, these shorts.
I mean, Old Navy.
Oh yeah, wow. They're great.
I haven't been to Old Navy since the early aughts when you would yearly go and buy the American flag family shirt.
Oh fuck.
Which was a classic. Just constantly buying 5 shirts with American flags.
We were once such a great nation. And that concludes Whose Pants Are These? All right. For those of you who don't know who Austin is, I'm going to give him the opportunity to explain that to you.
Wow.
Instead of me just saying it. You know, the more I do this show, the more I hate my voice, the more I hate the way I ask questions.
Mm.
But the better I like myself because I'm like, oh, I could just fix that because now I'm aware of it.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe everybody should have. No, actually, strike that. I think you need to pass a mental health check to own podcast equipment. Personally,
I think you were right. I think more people should be podcasting.
No,
it's about time.
Too many. It's a very saturated market. I'm like one of the first people to do it. Anyway, so late to the party. It's like I'm gonna start dabbing in every fucking frame. So Austin, tell us about yourself, pal. Why do these guests? Why should these guests give a fuck that you're here?
Wow. Let's see. I mean, they shouldn't, but. Okay, let's see. I'll give the basic backstory of my life. I was born in Memphis, Tennessee.
Really?
My father was in the Marines, so we moved around a bit. So I was in Tennessee as a child, and then went to California, a few different places, and then moved to New York. Was in New York for a good portion of my life, and then I moved out to Portland, Oregon, and then I recently moved back to New York. Missed the prices too much. Everything was too cheap in Portland. I was like,
damn, I need to be stressed out all the time.
I'm Let's like, this back. Beer is $6. I should be paying $9. What's going on?
Mm-hmm.
So I moved back to New York. And yeah, been here for a few years now. What do? I write and direct and create and yeah, try to fill the time with artistic ambitions.
I think you're probably the best guest of like summing up. All that was like a tight 2 minutes, and I got everything we needed to know. Thank you for listening, guys. That's it. Show's over. Fuck yeah! I didn't know you were from Memphis.
Yeah,
I had no idea. I would
never. Southern boy.
Little Southern boy. Yeah, Memphis. Is that where Elvis is from?
Oh.
Yeah. Right.
Big time Elvis city.
Big Elvis.
It's really he's just a huge part of the culture and economy still to this day, which is interesting. I mean, his cultural relevance has had a bit of a bounce back because of the Baz Luhrmann and Sofia Coppola films in back-to-back years. But it's interesting to think of him because he kind of faded, I'd say, from relevance for
a while.
A bit. Now he's having a moment again. But if you go to Memphis, it's like he's still the most popular person.
What's it, Graceland?
Yeah.
Yeah, Graceland. And then where's Dolly World? Have you ever been?
You're from the South. That's in I believe it's Pigeon Forge, Tennessee.
Oh, that is Dollywood. Also in Tennessee?
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
I like Dolly Parton.
So my grandpa claims that he knew Elvis, and this is a great tall tale of his. Was as a older Southern man had many tall tales.
Yes.
So he grew up in the projects and said that Elvis's cousins lived there, and Elvis would come by when he was still in the army, visit his cousins, and hang out. And I was like, that's an amazing story.
Yeah.
So he tells me. Years later, Elvis is like, famous. He's still friends with these cousins.
Yeah.
Elvis is living in Graceland. And the cousins ask my grandpa to come with him to visit. So he goes to Graceland, says he's walking around, goes to the room where Elvis has his piano.
Uh-huh.
And he says Elvis is sitting in the room alone playing piano.
What do you think he was playing? Hot cross buns.
He doesn't remember what song he's playing. I did ask. He's like, yeah, yeah. And he says he took a picture of him and then walked by. So he died, you know, I mean, Elvis died a billion years ago, but my grandpa died a few years ago. So when we were going through the stuff in his house, I was going through every single picture, trying to find this picture he took of Elvis in his room, allegedly.
Did you find it?
I didn't. Oh, I did not find it.
A fucking liar, Austin. Wake up.
Maybe he never got it developed. That's true.
Could be sitting in a little roll.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah, who knows? Maybe, yo, the hunt for that photo. If you guys know where that is, hashtag down below Austin's grandpa's photo of Elvis. Get it trending. Hell yeah.
That was trending last year. We got to think of a new one.
All right. Get Austin's... Find the photo. That's way better. Why didn't I think of that in the first place? My grandfather claimed he knew a lot of, like, famous people. Yeah. I believe him. Just because... Let him have it. You know, he's also dead. So what am I,
also,
you know?
They didn't really care about famous people.
No,
so
they
why
really
would they
didn't.
Lie about
they
it
really didn't. And now our generation is like, oh yeah, like my boy's cousin is like homies with like Patrick Mahomes' like nephew, bro. Like, I'm pretty much going to the Chiefs game. I don't know. I think it's just like a cool thing to be like, yo, I know somebody famous or I have a funny story about a famous person. I have plenty of stories of like famous people I've worked with, none that I'm willing to share on the show because I don't want to burn any bridges. I need a job. Yeah, that's when after I've made it.
Yeah.
When I'm 98 and in a nursing home and my career actually didn't happen because I fabricated all of it because my wife had left me because she found somebody that I could go all day.
That's
anyway,
the twist, dude. Don't give it away.
Yeah. Buy the book. So what got you into film? What got you into the genre?
Mm.
What got you into cinema?
Mm.
What made you like using a camera?
So my dad was a big, still is big film buff and passed that on to me very, very much. Very much like forced the notion of like you will become a cinephile. Like he had a son basically to like watch more movies with a person.
Gotcha.
So was very obsessed with movies early on. Also I just like watched a lot of TV and movies growing up just constantly. I saw a video, like a home video of me recently.
Mm-hmm.
I was probably 2 years old, could not form like full sentences. And my mom was filming me, pointing at the TV, saying Regis and Kathie Lee.
Wow!
So I'm a pop culture, you know, fanatic, obsessive. Which is it's a sad story that
I just
told.
It's very of like your generation's thing. Is like, I don't know how much older. I think you're like
I'm in my 65.
You're 65.
Yeah.
So you're about like I would say almost 10 years older than me probably. I think it's just very of that generation's time of just like TV. It's like. You know.
Yeah, I mean, I think everything moved to TV in a big way. Cable, you know, started getting more channels in the 80s and 90s, and it was easy as parents started to work more to put children in front of the television.
Right in front of the TV.
And the programming was just out of this world. I mean, 90s television is really remarkable stuff.
Yeah.
But they also, I think, like Nickelodeon especially.
I was just talking about Nickelodeon too.
They catered to... children, but in a way that also like, you know, like spoke to the creative and introspective side of their minds. Like it wasn't just pure fodder. There was thought that was going into what was going on. So I think I was attracted to that notion of like turning on the TV and seeing characters express stuff that I was feeling. So I started watching TV or movies a lot, would just rewatch stuff a lot. I feel like the first big one was The Jungle Book, the animated movie. That was the one that I rewatched as a child a lot.
Mm-hmm.
The first rated R movie I ever saw was Speed.
Speed.
So that was...
not familiar.
That's Keanu Reeves, There's a Bomb on the Bus.
Okay. That sounds like kind of familiar. All right.
It's one of the great conceits. There's a bomb on a bus, and if the bus goes below 50 miles an hour...
Oh, yeah.
It's just perfect.
Just
perfect.
Keep it going 55,
movie.
Bro. Problem solved.
Yeah. music videos were really a huge introduction to what could be happening within film.
Yeah.
And I think Spike Jonze is a very big influence in my life because I saw the Buddy Holly video by Weezer. Very early. It was in sixth grade, and I was blown away by this video. And I, you know, started looking into Spike Jonze, and I'm realizing like, oh, this guy started doing skate videos. Was just making stupid shit with his friends, then did music videos, and then, you know, he goes on to make Where the Wild Things Are, Being John Malkovich, Her, wins an Oscar.
Jackass.
Of course, yeah. Influential and Jackass. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I think seeing kind of all the different possibilities within the worlds of film, be it TV or like VHS as I was watching, my dad would show me, of course, like older classics and comparing those to stuff that I was watching and seeing the differences and, you know, acting and direction style between like the 50s and 90s. And
I
was really just captivated by the whole medium.
That is one thing that I always, because my dad, same, like we would always watch movies together. This was like when I was a kid, TV Guide was like pretty much obsolete. We still got it, but in the Time Herald record, it would tell you what's on tonight.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It was like a small section, and he would always just like, oh, there's a good movie on tonight.
Yeah.
We're watching it. We're watching it. I wouldn't have a fucking choice. But I always, every decade was just like, 80s movies to me, I'm like, terrible. I just can't do it.
Yeah.
Like, there's some classics, obviously, but like 70s. And 90s and even 60s, I'm like, all right, I'm right there.
Yeah.
You got me hooked in for like 2 hours. Only like 80s movies, besides like Star Wars, you know, besides like the big ones, all like there's something about that decade. I'm just like,
Lot of it was a reaction to what was happening in the 70s, where, you know, like the new Hollywood directors of the 70s had these gigantic successes with dark, personal, you know, introspective movies. Then Spielberg makes Jaws in 75. And it kind of changes the trajectory of what was happening within Hollywood.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden everything needed to have like, you know, something big and giant and, you know, had to be possible.
Yeah.
To
it became like a pissing contest. Like, who can do that? I mean, especially with horror around that time too, is like Halloween comes out and they go, all right, now somebody else has to create the next villain. And then anybody that's like a Jason Voorhees Friday 13th fan, I'm like, yo, literally go fuck it. Like, it's just Halloween, but worse.
Yeah.
And you're welcome, by the way. I was talking about that today at work. That's so interesting. So did you end up going to school did you have a brain and choose not to go to school for like film, or did you make the terrible mistake of going to school for film?
So I did. So like in high school, you know, I was making lots of videos with my friends. My friends were musicians, so I started working on music videos with them.
Gotcha.
I was in like a film study in senior year where I just made like, semi medium length projects. So there was like my own written material. So I did go to a year and a half of film school. I went to Hunter in New York City, and then I dropped out because I was like, oh, I can just like do this on my own. And then I didn't.
All right.
One is to do. I got a job at the Woodbury Commons, in fact.
Dude.
And I realized that I was just making money working. And then I was like, oh, I can just do weddings. And I started doing, you know, shooting some weddings and still tried to do music videos. And I kind of fucked up a bit.
You didn't fuck up.
I did.
At the time you did.
Dropping out was the mistake. I think I lost the kind of trajectory of what I should be doing.
Yeah.
So, I feel like the last few years I've regained the track of where I wanted to go, which is, you know, a little too late, but also nice to have a place to go.
I was going to say, I mean, you could go at that route of like, oh, about time I got it around though. But sometimes like our lives just send you in a different way for some weird reason. And I don't think it's going to make sense until the very end. You're like, oh, that kind of makes sense. Like, I didn't go to college for film, although I wanted to do it. Then after dropping out, I was like, I'm going to go to school for film. And then I was like, wait, let me just do this on my own.
Yeah.
And then I was doing that. And then I was like, oh, I need to make money. And anyway, fast forward to right now as I'm speaking to you, still in the same boat. But I think it's everybody's path is like absolutely fucking necessary. Like whatever life knowledge you gained in the last couple of years. And that's the biggest thing that scares me is like, if I get a regular job, sorry, Kara's parents and my parents, if I get a regular job that isn't involved in film, I might like completely lose all of that. And just, I don't know.
Delicate balance where you have to still maintain the passion for like what you're interested in and find a way to have the motivation outside of what's, you know,
it's
paying
hard,
for your healthcare and rent and everything.
Yeah, it's hard.
It's really, really hard. I think it's like, you know, I mean, yeah, a lot of people just never come back from it. And it takes so much work to put the effort into having both as be a part of your life.
Yeah.
But you know, you can do it.
Yeah.
Lots of people do.
So you just like stopped doing it just or was there like distractions or was just like work money. Because I guess, you know, money always is nice. It's a good, like, placebo effect for happiness. But then after a while, something, for most people, at least from what I could observe, it always, like, calls people back is to do something other than just work.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, like, I mean, I got really sick of doing weddings. Mm-hmm. It's a really, like... This is the plus side of having like a day job that doesn't have to do with the creative passion is that you're able to separate the work from what you love doing. So I was getting kind of sick of spending so much time that I was working on film with that being my source of income in a way that I was not creatively satisfied. So yeah, I was shooting a wedding and it didn't feel like I was getting what I wanted to get out of film. And instead that was just kind of like, oftentimes soulless work.
Yeah.
Especially like, I did a few gigs where, I've done like a lot of strange freelance stuff over the years.
I've looked at your Vimeo. I've seen some shit.
So I was when I moved to Oregon, I got, I signed up for a job just doing like contract video, work for a wedding company.
Uh-huh.
So they had like, you know, 40 videographers on staff that they would just like, hey, are you free this weekend? Okay, go shoot this wedding.
Damn.
And the weddings were pretty low rent weddings.
What is that, low rent? Like low pay or just like...
Like the weddings
themselves. Scumbag people getting married.
The weddings themselves. I went to one wedding that was... I got the address and I'm driving and it's like maybe like 2 hours from Portland. And Oregon is just like a strange like state. Like once you leave Portland, it's just like... kind of like a lot of states outside the city, just like a vast, bizarre country.
What the fuck is going on?
Yeah, like
Kingston, New York.
Looks strange. There's just like tons of farms that don't seem to be growing anything. You know, like I'm just like, what is this farm? There's nothing here.
There's disheveled barns.
Right.
One horse. That's
it. Right. It. I don't understand the utility of these places or the economy of how it's working whatsoever. But so I'm driving. I get the address. I'm looking around. I don't see anything. And I see a truck like pull into a driveway I didn't even see was there. So I go down that driveway and I realize there is a wedding in the middle of this gigantic field that I had to drive down a dirt road into the field. And there's like 50 cars and there's like a dance floor laid out and a beer truck laid out.
And that's it.
And that's basically it. There was chairs for the wedding. Everyone's wearing, like, you know, the stereotypical, like, kind of podunk wedding where it was, like, football jerseys tucked into jeans.
Oh, my.
And I was like, yo, I don't know if this is what I want to be doing.
No, I would, dude.
Like, there's some, like, shooting, like, you know, glorious sunset slow-mo shots of just, like, a guy, like, hitting his vape.
Yeah.
Is not, like, the most ideally romantic shot you can get.
Yeah, yeah.
Dude,
I've already filmed, I could already think about, of like maybe 8 or 9 projects that I've already shot that don't necessarily fit that exact description, but I totally understand what you're getting at.
Yeah.
Like there have been gigs where I'm like, I want to smash this fucking camera, get in my car and go home. Like this is killing me to be here.
Because it doesn't feel like, then I was wondering like, what do I want to do with film or writing or creativity in general? Do I want to use this as my source of income or do I want to find projects that I'm completely engaged with and only do those? And it's a hard balance to find because if you can make money doing something you love, that's great. But if the thing you love is killing you because it's so bleak, you know, then it kind of starts to take away your love of it.
Yeah. So you would say then film, you didn't love, you were treating film like a side piece, like a shoddy you would hit up if like, you're like, I kind of need to, rocks off. Film, come over, baby girl. Wear them blue shorts I like.
Yeah.
Like that?
Yeah. Okay. The late night you up to a wedding, wedding you contract. Up.
I get you up from fucking Amazon being like, hey, did you rate your last purchase? It'll be like 2 a.m. Why are you emailing me this, bro? I'm not going to fucking
thirsty,
do that.
Dude.
They want me
Jeff
to be like,
thirsty.
4 stars.
I just got, I've been getting a lot of spam texts. Mm-hmm. I must have given my number to some, terrible.
They're getting everybody,
thing.
Bro.
And it was a woman just sent a picture of herself and was like, are you busy? So I just, joking or probably, I'm like, oh yeah, I'm in a meeting. And she replies back, oh, okay, sorry. Like, what? What was the point
what
of this
you
spam?
Trying to get in contact?
You're not
with?
Really. Then I was like, damn, you don't want me? You don't want to push
damn,
a little
bitch,
harder?
Right? Yeah. No, the other day somebody messaged me. Hey, did the pieces for my Lincoln Corsair come in? This is Jennifer. I had this whole thing typed out. Like, yeah, but we're running into a little bit of an issue. The brackets for the bumper don't fit. And your headlight actually was cracked underneath. So we are going to have to replace the headlight assembly. But I could order one. But you're going to have to buy this. I had this whole thing typed out. And then I was like, no, don't do that. And I just fucking deleted it and threw my phone across the fucking room.
Oh, damn.
Like a psychopath. The fuck is wrong with me?
You should have done it.
I know. I can't. I can't do
just
that.
Just do it now.
I already responded. Wrong person, bro. I hope you're
Lincoln. Well, no, now it's time to follow up. Actually, sorry, this wasn't the wrong
wait,
person.
Wait, oh, you're the girl with the Lincoln course? Oh.
Sorry, I was mad tired the other day.
Yo, my fault. Yo, what are you doing right now? I feel you on that, though. Like, at what point does the thing you love just be like, I don't love this shit anymore?
But it's all learning experiences, yeah. Too, because I've done...
Do you feel like you got enough, though, out of it to make that decision, like, I don't want to do this right now?
I'll still do weddings, actually. I go back and forth on it, because there's times where I do, you know, like, my day job also feels pretty soul-sucking. Mm. But it's flexible. It's, you know, pretty easy.
And it's still in the field that you are in? No, right?
No, not at all.
I don't even know what the fuck your day job is.
No,
I don't know if you care.
No one
to
really
share.
Does. No.
Yeah.
All
I know
ambiguous.
Is you go somewhere and you come back.
Yeah.
That's it.
It sounds a lot like the J-Pain
job. Yeah. I bet you he doesn't even have a day job. He's fucking lying. he's a Nepo baby that is into big oil. That's what money bought those pants. That's why
exactly.
You're able to afford. Things
no
really
more
good
clearance,
right now.
Baby.
Yeah. Yeah. No
DuPont
more clearance.
DuPont coming through.
Yo, DuPont, bruh. Oh,
I do. Yeah. Like there's been weird gigs I've done where like, I've even like music video stuff, which I really enjoy a lot. I just remember one time I was doing, there was like a guy who was trying to become like a bit YouTube famous, like do like YouTube covers. And I remember he came over to my house, to my parents' house. Mm. We went to my basement and I shot like a video of him in front of like a black curtain.
Damn.
And it was so quiet.
Yeah.
And he was like lip syncing. And it was just me and him. And he was singing a Katy Perry song. But it was like, you know, it was like kind of a slowed down dramatic version.
What song was it?
I've got the eye of a tiger. No, it was, I can't remember.
All right.
I wish
I. On the spot. I like Katy Perry.
I mean, she's got great stuff.
Yep.
I'll go back to Katy Perry because I actually want to ask you if she's awesome.
Okay.
Awesome. But right. So I was like, this is weird. This is like a bizarre experience where it's just me and this guy. I don't know how much I'm learning about the experience, but I do feel like in retrospect, like stuff like that helps you kind of learn how to direct a little bit. You're like, this is an odd situation that I still have to get the best out of the performer in front of me. How can I make this work?
And I find that, if you could direct a really terrible actor, you'll be fine.
Yeah.
It's like hurting a cat.
Yeah. I used to think that there were like no terrible actors. It was like all on the director. And then you realize that's not true. There are some pretty bad actors. Yeah.
I'm going to name drop one right now and I'll bleep it out. That was for Spencer.
I don't think I'm a very good actor. I have a very hard time.
Yeah.
Like reading lines.
Memorizing it or
both.
Just putting this.
I did.
On it.
You did like high school theater and stuff, right?
If you can call it that. Yeah.
Did you have like lots of lines? Were you good at memorizing?
Sometimes. Yeah. There was one thing we did. Death of a Salesman. I couldn't remember shit. It was just way too much talking. Biff.
Oh wow.
It's way too much fucking line. I could sum this up in 2 seconds. Fuck you, Dad. Kill yourself. Not. I used to remember when I was a boy, and it's like, oh.
Death of a Salesman
dude,
in high school?
Like that. Yeah, I know.
That's a hilarious
Shout
high
out.
School play.
Yeah. Dude.
That's a very funny text
brother,
to be giving high schoolers.
Brother.
It just so doesn't make sense when you're in high school.
Neither does doing Othello and me being cast as Othello. That happened. I had to go to the emergency room after Death of a Salesman. One thing also I realized about this podcast,
hard.
I got to stop talking about like high school shit. Like I'm fucking 25. Grow the fuck up. Anyway, I ate a McChicken and it put me in the emergency room because there's something wrong with it. I don't know. I just had to go to the ER. Do you remember that?
Yeah. What was the situation?
I ate the McChicken and I was like, oh, fuck. Like I thought something was like rupturing or whatever. And then I went to the emergency room and something in my abdomen like got all fucked up. I don't know. I have no fucking clue. But that McChicken, bro, that was the last time I had McDonald's.
So one time I have a problem where I don't chew my food very well.
Oh, I chewed it.
I get like overly excited and I start talking and there's just like large chunks of chicken just like sitting in my mouth. And so I was at Wendy's having a chicken sandwich and a piece of chicken got lodged in my throat. I couldn't throw it up.
And I just
couldn't breathe.
Yeah.
And I was with my family, and this was probably like the 50. I was old. I'm like out of high school at this point. This happens constantly.
This was yesterday.
And they were like, my dad's like, just like throw it up. And I couldn't throw it up. And it was like stuck there. And I was like trying to take a drink of Sprite. And it was like the worst floating thing to there. Do. And I was like, that's like doing that. And so we go to the hospital, and I go inside the emergency room, and it's sitting there, and I like, can barely breathe. Like it feels I have a straw that I'm like breathing
fill
out
this
of.
Out.
Well, they bring me back there. So I the doctor comes in and I immediately then am able to throw up. So I throw up in the sink and there's I swear it just looks like the size of a chicken sandwich. And the doctor looks at it and he looks back at me and he goes, I think you should take smaller bites. And it was a great timing by the doctor.
Dude, whoever's driving that fucking motorcycle outside, take off already. Shit.
Sorry, it's my wife.
Yeah, his motorcycle-bound wife. That's fucking embarrassing. There's people dying in emergency rooms, and you couldn't cough up a chicken sandwich, you pussy.
This happens to me constantly. This happened...
Nah, I went to the emergency... I went to the emergency room 2 summers ago. I went to the emergency room 2 summers ago because I got water in my ear and it bothered me. And I was like, I'm just going to go to the ER and have them suck it out. They don't do that at the ER, by the way. They don't do that. Cause
they're just stand on one leg and do that thing.
Bro, dude. So me and my girlfriend came back from our wonderful vacation to Cape Cod. Boring as fuck, but we had a good time.
Mm, sounds good.
Go into a pool. Jump in, boom, water in the ear. I was like, no, when I get ear infections, I've gotten like a couple. I'm like about to kill myself. I'm like, I'm going to give up. Yeah. I can't do this anymore. My ear hurts. 2 days, I'm fine.
Mm.
Back on it. Anyway, we were filming theater camp, and I'm like, dude, the last thing I want is an ear infection in one ear and a surveillance in the other.
Yeah.
So I was like, I'm going to the ER, and they're going to suck out this water. I went to Walgreens, got like a thing to suck out. It wouldn't come out. It went behind my eardrum, and then I got an ear infection. But I remember waiting in the ER, and I was like, this is so embarrassing.
What did they say
to
you?
Bro, the doctor goes in. He goes, hello, I am the doctor. And I just started laughing. I was like, who the – no, you're not. What's your name? And he goes, what is wrong? And I was like – I was about to do a fucked up accent. He like goes, yeah, you have water under your eardrum. I was like, can you suck it out? No, we don't do that. Who does? Fucking Valvoline? Jiffy Lube? Like who do I go to? You guys are the hospital.
It seems like they can do that.
Right?
There's pretty advanced
surgeries
going on.
There's got to be like one nurse that can just go – nope, apparently not. So then I got an ear infection and had to finish theater camp with an ear infection. But I was being really brave about it.
That's not.
No,
yeah,
I wasn't.
You're
I
such
was
a
bitching
big boy.
So hard. I was like, if Macy or Andrew or Kara or anybody I worked with that's listening to this, probably not because you're busy working on stuff. You can vouch that I was being such a pussy. I was like, oh, my ear. They call for prof to go.
Well, I mean, luckily. I recover really well when I choke on food because, then I feel better because I've thrown up a large piece of meat usually. This happened actually just like literally weeks ago. I was with my best friend. Uh-huh. We were at Quinn's in Beacon and I choked on a hot dog. And
them hot dogs will get you, man. All that ramen juice.
Well, and we were just talking, we were gabbing. Uh-huh. And I just go, excuse me. And I get up and I run to the bathroom and like, I'm trying again. This is like such a vile story to me. This is my second vomiting story I'm telling.
Hey, fuck it. I don't even remember what the hell we were talking about in the first place, but
so
finish this up.
I'm in the bathroom trying to dislodge this sausage. Mm-hmm. And, I hear my friend just go, he knocks on the door and he goes, hey, are you okay? I'm like, oh no. And then it finally comes out and I walk out. I'm like, all right, good to go.
All right, more hot dogs.
Yeah.
Boom. And that concludes Austin's second vomiting story. This fucking motorcycle, man. That better be Chuck Norris out there, or I'm gonna be fucking pissed.
It's probably not Chuck Norris.
It's not. It's some random dude. So, yeah. I mean, well, how did you go from... You were still... Once you got your mysterious day job, you were still actively filming stuff.
Yeah.
Because I've watched Mike. I've seen the trailer for Mike. Oh, I've seen some of the music videos that you shot. Yeah. And some really good shit.
Oh, thank you.
Some really solid stuff. I'm jealous. My stuff sucks. But has there been a favorite project so far? I know you have some new ones coming up in the pipeline.
Yeah, I feel like, yeah, the last, I guess, as with a lot of folks, it was like pre-pandemic stuff versus, you know, like after has been like a real schism in like what I was doing and how I was approaching things. Because I actually made a feature film called Mike, that you were alluding to. And that was, we finished it in 2019. Like I finished the edit and everything. And I actually got to show it. It was part of like a new filmmakers fest at Anthology Film Archives in the city, which was like the coolest thing that's ever happened to me ever. It was like my number one goal was to have a movie play in a movie theater in New York City, and it happened. And I don't think that would have happened, you know, like after 2020. Like it was a really unique situation that we were able to like go there, have a, you know, pretty decent crowd, like people in the theaters. And if it had been released a few months later, it just like wouldn't have, it would have come out online and nothing would have happened. So Mike was definitely an amazing experience for me because I worked
with my name. It's just funny to hear that
based on your life.
Thanks.
I got to work with, you know, one of my best friends. I kind of wrote it for him and forced him to be the lead. But then I actually got some like real actors and actresses to be a part of the, film, which was amazing to like show a script I wrote to an actor and they're like, oh, this is really cool. I would love to be a part of it. It was like a really, really amazing experience. So I think that's, you know, to this day, probably number one. And then I worked on a project with one of my good buddies, Joe. We did like a visual album for an EP he made, where it was like an extended music video that kind of told the story. And that was a really, really awesome experience that I loved, that came out, I think, really, really great. And we had a puppet named Moses that was a big part of it.
That's sick.
So I'm a big Muppets guy. So having having a lead puppet character was huge.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's dope. I've never worked with puppets or Muppets, but hopefully one day.
Yeah.
Do you find, like, do you have, this is a hard question that I'm going to try to phrase the best way as possible. When I mean hard question, I mean it's hard for me to figure out how to ask this. When you step away, and that's something I talked about with Hampton a few episodes ago, when you step away from film, from the thing that you love or your passion or whatever, and then you go into your day job, and then you go back, is there a particular world that you find you like learn the most about yourself that you can implement in the other, or they kind of just parallel exist and there's no like crossovers?
I mean, I think there's basic stuff like how to work successfully with a team and how to manage different like personalities. But I do feel like generally they're pretty separate.
Okay.
And yeah, I actually had, I was at a work event and I had someone asking me like, you know, like, what do I get out of my job?
Paycheck.
I basically said that. And they're like, you know what? Actually, that's like, I appreciate you saying that because a lot of times jobs are for, you know, your like life security. And it's good to have a job that gives you healthcare and rent.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, that's actually why that's doing this because it's, you know, helping to finance the stuff that I'm really passionate about.
Yeah.
Which is cool. But I mean, yeah, I don't necessarily think I take too much from one world to another.
Okay. All right. That's totally valid. I find I daydream or just like will think about ideas and stuff constantly when I'm in my, you know, my day jobs, my million and one fucking day jobs. And then when I'm on set, I'm just like a mess, as you saw today, that I had to leave twice and come back. Shout out to Michael for getting back home from Rhode Island in time to pick up that SSD.
King.
But, yeah, I always ask that because, like, I don't know. I'm, like, I'm getting to the point where, okay, I'm 25. I need to figure out fucking something. I can't just bank on, like, somebody knocking on my door and going, hey, you want to be in my movie? Like, that's just not going to happen. Not like I'm saying I'm banking on that, but, like, you know, I feel like a lot of people, like myself, lie to themselves, go, yeah, no, everything's going to work out. Yeah, it'll be fine. I just got to do this. And then comes the execution stage, and then I'm like, oh, shit, so what do I do? That's why I asked that question because I wouldn't mind switching over to a day job. I really wouldn't, but I know myself and I've seen like other examples, and I'm not going to call like my family members out or like friends of mine out, but like it's terrifying to go into like a career that I could give if I know I'm going into it with the intent of doing something else instead. why even fucking going? And I've done that a million one times. I'm just going to work this job until this.
Yeah.
Then I'm like, why don't I just do this now? And then it fails or it doesn't pick up, whatever. But
I
need fucking money, man. Shit.
Yeah, dude. I think you need, and like I say you as in the royal you, like we all need to find like what is driving you behind, you know, your love of different outlets that you're working on. So if you're in film because you love like performance or you love, you know, filmmaking, editing, like then finding a way to drive into that deeper is really valuable. But if you're finding that you just like kind of like the notion of film in like a broad way, maybe it is okay to take a step back because then you'll realize like, oh, okay, this is what I loved about it, or this is, you know, what I actually want to focus on. Because I think like for me, when I leaned more, when I like got a full-time day job and everything, and I was doing like kind of freelance stuff a little bit less, I actually found that like writing was like my main thing that I was loving doing still. And that I feel like I'm the best at. And it's something that I could spend time on even with a day job. It's easy, you know, you don't need a crew to write. And I guess to go back to your previous question, being out in the world is like very important for a writer, because like I enjoy listening to conversations and experiencing weird, you know, weird things that I just
random
wouldn't experience sitting.
Bullshit.
Or even if you're like on a set full time, like a lot of filmmakers later in life, their scripts start to just reflect like so much about movie making, and they lose a touch of like what it's like to be a human out in the world.
Yeah.
And I think that that's a really valuable part of filmmaking, is having, depending on the type of films that you want to make, but like, I really like, you know, personable character study stuff that you can't really write about if you're not out there listening to people. I mean, and that was something I missed a lot when I was in Portland kind of during the pandemic, when everything was really, really locked down. Like I found that I was missing just sitting in a bar, like kind of eavesdropping, or like taking a walk and like going to the park and listening to like conversations, or ending up at a random party, like talking to a bizarre person, like things that are, that make kind of, you know, fill out the colors of life are very valuable to the storytellers.
The colors of life. I like that. Yeah. I never realized how beneficial like human observation and interaction it was until like right before the pandemic happened. Yeah. And I remember like, cause college, terrible experience. It just was. I had a handful of friends, but I was like probably the most introverted I'd ever been. And that's saying something, cause I don't shut the fuck up. I will talk to a brick, not a whole wall. That's too much, but one brick. And right around like January, February, I was like, nah, I need to get myself out there. And I start taking my headphones out, start talking to people, like, this is terrible. Like, and then the pandemic happened. I was like, oh no, shit. But it kind of turns out, I don't think I was kind of ready to just like start, you know, whatever. And then I, unfortunately, dark stages of making funny, or at the time, funny videos on TikTok to send to my friends.
Yeah.
So all of you out there, I'm so sorry for what I put you through. And I understand why you don't follow me or watch anything that I make.
You did this during the pandemic?
Yeah, it was pretty bad.
I
was making like a new funny video like every other day.
I found similarly where I had like an urge all of a sudden to make a lot of stuff.
I just needed something to do. I was like, I love to create. I think that was the thing I realized the most.
Yeah.
But I never really thought I was like capable of creating other than just like, I don't know, fucking something like small and minor. But eventually now I've gotten to the point where I'm like, oh, this is like the only thing I want to do is just make shit. It just feels better.
Yeah, I had, in like 2019, I had worked on a few projects, and I had done a few music videos in a row, and it was feeling really cool and good. Like it felt like a nice trajectory, and then 2020 hits and you can't be around anyone.
Yep.
And I did feel that was confirmation to me that I was like, oh, I really do want to stay working on film.
Yeah.
And like, you know, just creative outlets in general, because I had such a yearning for it when I couldn't go out and work on something with people, which I think was a helpful push to see that this isn't something I should like move away from because it's inconvenient or it's not always working out or projects are falling through, because I still had such a desire for it even when nothing was panning out, I realized.
Damn. Profound. Very profound. Austin Abbott, ladies and gentlemen.
What's your favorite era?
fuck.
To think about. I know there was a TikTok thing where it was like men think about the Roman Empire.
My God.
But I didn't relate to that because I don't often think
about
the Roman
I don't
Empire.
Understand where that came from. I think it's just one of those things, and you can thank podcasts for this, that people have just started really generalizing their view on like certain groups. I think white guys fall in this category.
Mm.
Like hard. I mean, any type of person does, but like my girlfriend asked me that also, what's your Roman Empire? I'm like, what the fuck is that? What is that? The era I think about the most probably is like late 2007 to like 2012, like skate culture, where it was like skinny jeans were like kind of a thing. Yeah, Lakai was like just Zoomies in 2011.
Wow.
Take me back.
I remember going to Zoomies.
Or Middletown Mall, 2008.
I went to Zoomies in the Galleria to get my copy of Elementality signed by Mike Vallely.
Yo.
That's something for the
real
heads
right
there. Take me back right
there. Yeah. Take me back there.
Yeah.
And be all, Zoomies sucks, bro. Support local skate shops. Absolutely. Hacienda Skate Shop. Go check them out.
Let's go.
But back in the day when those places didn't exist, there was Zoomies. There was the Middletown Galleria. Fuck with that mall heavy. But to answer your question... I don't know if I have a favorite.
I think mine now, when I turned 30, I mean a few years ago, but I turned 30 and I started thinking about World War II more. It was like instantly. I like turned 30 and I was like,
I'd like to go back to that.
Sean or Shane Gillis, I think Shane Gillis says he's like, you may be like, you know, in your late 20s, early 30s, being like, oh, I'm not into history, I'm not. And it's like, it's coming, bro.
It's happening. Yeah.
Just all. I bought a book that was just called like World War II.
Like, it's right just to the point.
Yeah, I was just like, I gotta know what's going on.
I gotta know what. Whoa, they're doing what to who? Shit, somebody's gotta stop this. Oh, it's over. Oh, all right.
Yeah. It was a, yeah.
It's fuck.
I was gonna say it was a one and done, but actually in the title, it's number two. So
the one thing I don't joke
about
historically, like no joke, and.
The potato famine?
Oh, that for sure. But Vietnam, because I work with a lot of dudes that like were either drafted or were around that. And I'm like, that is probably the most fucked up thing to like live. Just being like, this one guy I work with, I'm not going to say who he was like, yeah, like I was supposed to go.
Yeah.
Like I was about to just ditch, fuck my whole identity, whatever. Like couldn't sleep, couldn't eat. Like I didn't even know what I was going to say to my girlfriend at the time. And then they just pulled out of Vietnam and it was like,
yeah,
boom. But like all of his boys got killed. And it was like, holy shit, on a dark note.
Yeah, that was a big whoopsie back then.
Whoops. Yeah. Government's filled with a lot of those.
Hey, it happens.
Maybe if the president had a podcast with the vice president, I feel like a lot of more things would get figured out.
That would be a bummer.
That
to
would
listen to.
Dude, it totally would. Be like, so we want to talk about? We want to talk about this problem, this problem, this problem, this problem. And then Biden's just like, oh, fuck. Caitlin Clark's not going to the Olympics. Let's talk about that.
Biden does not know who Caitlin Clark is. He might not even know what the Olympics are.
I think he thinks Caitlin Clark is an ice cream brand.
What president would have been the greatest podcaster?
Oh, fuck.
Like the obvious answer seems like Clinton, right? Like Clinton.
Enough.
He has the swag.
But his wife would be like in the studio and he'd have to like calm down and probably kill the sound guy after every episode. I don't know. I feel like okay. It depends on what kind of podcast viewer you are, because obviously if you're like super left leaning, you probably would fuck with like an Obama. And if you're super right leaning, obviously Trump or like Reagan. But I think like Roosevelt was probably on some shit back in his day.
Oh, he would
bro.
Spit, dude.
Or like Grover Cleveland, Ulysses S. Grant probably had some fucked up things to say.
William Henry Harrison.
William Henry, McKinley put that motherfucker in front of a microphone.
Damn, McKinley, R.I.P.
Yeah, bro, he was.
You can basically say R.I.P. about every president.
As
if that was like he recently died.
As if we know anything.
I'm just gonna start saying R.I.P. about people like Attila the Hun.
Attila the Hun.
R.I.P.
Yo, he would have been fucking crazy on a podcast.
He had a podcast.
Yeah, he did. Yeah. What was it called? The Hunt Report or something? Hunting with Attila. Well,
Big Buck Hunter.
Yo, I both love and hate podcasting. As a podcaster,
I thought you were gonna say presidents.
I hate it so much. Oh, I hate politics so much, and I'm so sorry that I brought up presidents. But
no, let's keep talking. About it.
Yeah, let's talk. Let's get really.
What's
fucking
your favorite Gerald Ford policy?
Yo, honestly, the Explorer or the F-150 is probably my favorite. Let's talk about your fucking book,
all
Austin.
Right, let's do
Fuck.
It. Let's do it. Letterman.
We got to talk about your book. I just love it. It's. I tried calling a short stories by Austin Abbott. I love it. We care to talk about it because, like I said, this book is a collection of the voices you hear after a tape rewinds, the voices from your past you never thought you'd hear again, the voices that wash over the quiet of your apartment when you walk inside from the rain and see a blinking red light and press play. Kids, for those of you who don't know what a answering machine is, it's that thing that your phone has, and it used to be its own machine. Awesome. What inspired this small book? Thank you for this copy, by the way.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So this was actually, I started writing this in 2020 where I had,
there's
a
motorcycle again,
a bunch of scattered ideas for films or, you know, like I have a notebook and I'll just like write like a character I think of or kind of like a one-off thing. It would be a good scene maybe. And I had a bunch of these that I just felt like weren't part of a complete project, but I liked the notion of each of them individually. So I started kind of turning some of them into just a short story because I was reading, a bunch of short story collections because I feel like I lost my attention span, like forgot how to read basically. Yeah, and then I was like, okay, I need to start reading again. So I started reading collections of short stories. Raymond Carver was a big influence on this project and just like kind of kickstarting what my interests were again when I started reading some Raymond Carver short stories. So I started writing these as short stories, but even then they felt like not maybe fleshed out enough.
Okay.
So I had this one video that I did where it was a sketch where I was leaving a person a voicemail. And it's like I was calling this woman, telling her about a dream I had about her. It's a very disturbing dream. And then I end the voicemail with saying, like, excited to start working together. And great, great bit by me. Great punchline. But I was like, okay, what if I take some of these stories that I have and format them as like voicemails, write it out like that. So I kind of honed in on each chapter being one character calling someone else and fleshing out the short story as a transcript of a message left on an answering machine. So they're not connected. Each chapter is its own story. They take place over, you know, several decades, all across, you know, different places, different types of phones, different types of people. Some are serious, some are funny, but they all, came from just like little unfleshed out ideas I had that I'd been writing about.
I love it. I mean, honestly, I watched the one when we first met, you showed one that you'd filmed.
Oh, yeah.
And usually anytime, because Spencer's like the golden retriever of dying industry films. Like everybody goes to Spencer first, like, oh my God, Spencer. Then I'm like, let's see what this person's got first. And Spencer showed that to me first, and I was like, all right, I like this dude. And then now here you are. But yeah, I tried calling Short Stories by Austin Abbott on Amazon.
So it's...
Did I make that up?
No, I actually just... It's now on Kindle, so you can get the Kindle copy on Amazon.
Kids, if you don't know what a Kindle is...
You can do... I have paperback that you can order from Big Cartel, which is numerochair.bigcartel.com. We also... my friend Mike and I, star of the film Mike...
I gotta get him on here.
He helped me. We had 32 actors record each chapter, and we did an audio version of it. And we did it, you know, super hyper realistic to the type of phone, type of answering machine. All the audio is like extremely in tune with whatever the chapter is. And the actors were incredible.
So you got an audio book.
Yeah, so we have that's Bandcamp. Cool. So we have audio version, Kindle version, paperback, and you can just also get a PDF if you don't want to support Amazon but you want a digital copy.
Hey, go get this book and support this dude, Austin. I'm excited to read. I like the quality of the print here. You know what I just thought about? This would be perfect to bring to the acting group because there's like technically kind of scripts in here already.
Oh, that would be really
there
cool.
There
you
go. Yeah. And that's how we plug your book. And be like, oh, can you send me a copy of that? No, but you can buy one. Fucking bum.
Yeah, very there's stoked on that. It's been cool. I brought a segment to the podcast
today.
You did?
I heard. I'm excited.
So I got some scratch-offs for everyone in the room.
You knew I had a gambling
addiction. Oh, wait. Actually, since you're the host, pick a number between 31 and 35.
Are they all the same scratch-off?
Yeah, yeah.
34.
All right. 34.
All right. One for me.
Yeah.
We got one for yourself.
All right. 33, 32, 31, or 35?
31. We got Kale back there. A little mixing up some sound for us today. Going with 31. All right.
All right.
And Spencer.
I'm going 33.
Spencer's nice. Sweaty ass is over there going with 33.
I'm having to keep it.
Here.
Dude, I know. I keep looking at it. It's terrifying. Fucking cover that thing.
All right.
What do you got? You have a quarter? Or
yeah.
You, okay.
I got a quarter for you.
For
I'm going to take 32.
So what? We're
in honor of Magic
gamble?
Johnson. So this is the thing. You
okay.
can win up to $5,555 here.
To take five.
I figured we should do this live because it'll be really weird if you win that. what's your, like, how are you? It'll give me something.
Yeah.
So how much are you going to give me? We're going to figure it out live.
Okay.
What the cut's going to be if you win $5,555.
And what if we win less than that?
Well, you're most likely going to win less than that.
I take a, all right.
Big odds right. on $0.
I fuck with that. Maybe we should do this every week. This is a good Austin's gambling addiction segment. All right. And the rules are for instant take five, get three like amounts, win that amount. Get three take five symbols and win a take five quick pick free play. Here we go. How we doing over there, Spence?
I also got 2 5-5-5-5s.
I bet you they probably put two on all of them. They go, I bet you there's some idiot with a podcast and this is exactly what this is for.
Well,
maybe we could,
fellas,
maybe we could fake one.
I have good news for me.
What'd you win?
I won a dollar.
All right.
I got the three take five.
Oh,
nice,
so you
dude.
Win a free take five quick pick play.
So that means you're entered in, I think, the
so
overall
your
lottery.
So reward is you have to go to the gas station and claim it to win another game that you might win.
And then you need,
for.
Like, an app.
Yeah.
I got that once, and I had to put the number on an app, and I was like, I'm never doing
this
again.
Not doing
this.
But, sir, you can win. I don't care.
But I did win it. Spencer, you win anything?
No. Nah.
He's fine.
Nothing. So I'm the only winner here. It makes sense because I'm the guest of honor.
$1.
I won $1.
Good job. Awesome. Way to be. For those of you who are struggling with a gambling addiction, remember, 99% of gamblers quit right before they're about to win. So keep fucking gambling.
Let me give one gambling tip.
Yeah.
Non-NBA basketball. Yeah. Okay. Open up DraftKings, right?
Okay.
At halftime of like EuroLeague, Turkish ball, WNBA, college.
Orange County
look,
section.
Look at the total score of the game. If the money line is 10 points more than the total score at halftime, take the under.
Okay.
It wins constantly.
All right.
That's my free tip.
Damn, dude.
Take the under if the money line total is over 10 points more than the halftime total.
Let's talk a little bit about this new project that myself, you, Spencer, and Urshad, yo, shout out to Shad, our most viewed episode. Bro brought the whole hood to Apple and Spotify. Love you, bro. Talk about our new project we got coming up.
So I guess it was last year Spencer approached me on the street. He found me just in the middle of nowhere. He had been tracking me.
Are you the guy?
Which I thought was weird. I hadn't seen Spencer in 15 years, and he came up to me and was like, hey, we need to talk. And I was like, I don't know who you are. We got to talking. And we're working on this project where we're interviewing kind of local staples of the community, getting their story and figuring out and deducing why they're important to the community, mm-hmm. what why they've stuck around, especially, you know, post 2020, mm-hmm. a lot of places closed, what makes a place stay open. And yeah, it's been cool to figure it out, talk about community and the importance of it and start to chat to folks who are important to the community and helping make the community a lively, better place.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. That is the biggest thing what I like about, oh my God, the flies on the light, you fucking dickhead. Especially an area like Newburgh, which is getting rapidly gentrified as we speak. And there is a big misconception about true community of like, now granted, I'm not going to like look down on somebody cause they came here with a lot of money from like another city and opened up some fucking bullshit ass coffee shop. I don't care. But, you know, the important thing is like the people that have been here from the jump that might not have enough money to put in fancy new fucking bar stools and sell $32 artisanal sandwiches. What the fuck are you doing? That their stories and their lives doesn't just get fucking flushed away.
Yeah.
DreamWorks. Good movie. And I'm, you know what? I was thinking about it. I was like, yo, if this show takes off and we just get to travel and film and just talk to people about their fucking stories, pay me $11.75 an hour. I'm there.
It's a really beautiful thing because so many places, I mean, there's a place that just closed. I live in Beacon, New York, and there's a place, Max's that just closed.
Max's closed?
Yes. It was coming up on 18 years.
Damn.
And it was a real staple of the community. It got me thinking about just the importance of places that don't feel like they're fully of the time.
Yeah.
You know, like places that are timeless in that they're there because they care about what their product is, mm-hmm. not necessarily trying to, you know, be exactly of the moment.
Yeah.
And those are like the best type of bars that you can walk into is a place that you're like, there's a poster from 2 years ago and a poster from 1957.
Yeah.
And a
weird art that some local artist made and is selling. Fuck you. I'm buying that shit. Give me my bagel.
Yeah. But you'll look at it. It's just a mishmash. But you can tell places like that, they care about their surroundings. They care about the people who come in.
Absolutely.
Every day.
I
think that places like that are so beautiful. It's the utility of a dive bar.
Could not agree more,
bro. I've driven cross country several times in my life, and it's very interesting that you can find, after, you know, like 100 miles of seeing nothing in Wyoming, you're just like through the mountains, through these fields.
Through the prairies.
And then you hit like a weird little town.
Mm-hmm.
And in all these towns, there's like, you know, 100 houses. There's like a grocery store, or actually a Dollar General is very
random
popular.
Cross burning in some.
That's, yeah. Go a little.
You go a little south. Yeah. Past Memphis.
But there's, you know, a bar. There's a dive bar. There's like, you know, a communal watering hole that has been there. You can look at it and you're like, that's been there since 1957.
Yep.
And there is something to be said about being the place that people go to. I mean, that's why shows like Cheers are very endearing because they represent exactly that notion of a place where you can recognize everyone.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's the most exciting thing that ever happened to me ever was when I was going to college briefly in New York City. And I would go to the breakfast cart outside of the school. And when the guy in the breakfast cart knew my order without me asking, I was like, this is the peak.
Interesting.
I'm in New York City.
Interesting.
And this guy knows my order. This is, I've made it. This is all I want. But it represents the care of a person owning a business that can recognize a person who's there daily. And I think that that's a beautiful thing about community-based places.
Absolutely. I hate chain restaurants. Although, if anybody wants to sponsor me,
Chili's,
baby.
Chili's, too, I think Chili's would be great for this.
But, yeah, I mean, you can kind of just, you can get, I think there's a unspoken vibe or I hate using that word, between places that stand for that or that are just like, we're just here to do this thing. But then there's other places that like, well, you know, we might as well open this because I already had so much money and people are going to come here anyway. And it's like, you know, when people Google an area and go, oh, let's go to here. It's new, it's kitsch, it's cool, it's whatever. And then the real cool spot that everybody actually would want to go to, they don't got time to like Google. They're like, I'm not going to put my stuff on Google. We've been here for 60-something years, yada, yada, yada. I had somebody remember my order at a burrito place that shall remain nameless, and I got so embarrassed. I like walked in and get my burrito, and then the one girl was like, what can I get for you? And the other girl was like, oh, I know what he wants. Comes in there all the time. I was like,
was it a chain burrito place?
It was like a local chain.
Okay.
It was Bubba Coos.
Okay.
I was, because I live like right there.
Yeah.
I was so, I was like, I'm never going back.
Wow.
I was so, I don't know what it was. I was like, you, how dare you?
Yeah.
I can't be fucking mysterious for 2 seconds. God.
I just had a burrito yesterday.
From where?
It was in the airport in Chicago.
Just say Chipotle.
It wasn't, though. It wasn't. It was what a name was I did not recognize.
What was it?
I don't remember.
What, on the
board? No, it was something I'd never heard of before.
Bro went to Kirkland's Burrito.
Yeah, it was a local shop. It was a local shop in the airport.
A local? No fucking such thing. Where was it? It was not no local. There's no such thing as a mom and pop shop in a fucking national airport. Yo, I love Salsa Fresca. Shout out to them. I might go there after this.
It was not Chipotle, which I you know, fine. I don't care about Chipotle.
What was it?
I don't remember the name.
Okay, all right.
It was like Burrito Central or something.
Motherfucker lying on his ass. Anyway, it's time for Ball and What Cost. Hit the music. All right. So here are the rules of Ball and What Cost. We're going to list three items. All you got to do is name or list the items from lowest to highest.
Lowest to highest, okay.
Lowest to highest. Three items. I'm not going to tell you the prices, but I'm going to tell you the items. Yep. These were curated specifically for you via our producer, Spencer, who's over there on the couch.
King.
All right. So with that being said, we have 2.6 meters. What does that mean? 2.6 meters Godzilla costume. That's what it says.
Meters?
2.6 meters Godzilla. I swear to God.
It's from Amazon.co.uk.
Does it not say that?
So, okay.
Designed to fit. Godzilla costume.
Yep.
Hot Wheels Super 6 Lane Raceway. And a copy signed Jaws VHS or poster. Ooh. By Steven Spielberg.
Wow.
Copy of a signed poster.
Copy of. It is not an authentic.
Okay.
It is a copy of a signed poster of Jaws by Steven Spielberg. So yeah. Once again, just to recap, we have the 2.6 millimeter Godzilla costume. We have the Hot Wheels Super 6 Lane Raceway and a copy of a poster signed by Steven Spielberg of the movie Jaws. Austin Abbott. Ball and What Cost gets the price.
Okay. All right. So I'm going to go, if it's a copy of the poster, I'm going to go copy of the poster, Godzilla costume, Hot Wheels track.
Is that your final answer? You're locking that in?
Oh my God. I'm living out my prices right nightmare right now. Yes, I'm locking it in.
Drew Carey with his stick microphone. That
Drew Carey, oh my goodness. He's like, you are younger price. Than me.
I know it was Bob Barker before that, but Drew Carey's been doing it for a minute. So that's your final answer?
That's my final answer.
Just to recap, you said...
I said poster, Godzilla costume, race track.
All right. And that is incorrect. Very close. Least expensive was the poster.
Okay.
But then it was the Hot Wheels Super 6 Lane Raceway and the Godzilla costume. Closing it out at $195. Hot Wheels Raceway is $123.99. And the poster was $100, which is a huge ripoff. I could forge that for cheaper.
That's a pretty big ripoff.
You didn't win Ball and What Cost, damn. But hey, it's all right. I didn't win anything on that scratch off, so it cancels it out. Anyway, moving on. Every guest on this show has the opportunity to make some cash or walk away with something really cool. So, Austin, you can have $20. Take your phone back, Spence. Nice. Or what's in the mystery box?
Oh, my God. I've been watching a lot of Guy's Grocery Games recently.
Yeah.
And he does that. You can take the check or shop for the full amount. So this is tough. I will go mystery box. I just have to.
I've been waiting all week to give you this thing. I had to switch out the mystery box item today. That was embarrassing. What is it?
Oh, wow.
There we go.
Oh,
wow,
my
look
God.
At that. It's a book that I wrote. Just kidding.
Folks, we got...
Large print crosswords.
128 pages. Mm-hmm. This is volume 125, which is perfect because I have volumes 1 through 124.
Oh, sweet.
This is unbelievable because I was
pencil.
Just today going to go get 125.
Pencil, you ungrateful piece of shit. Came with a pencil, too. Don't forget that.
Yeah, the pencil's all right.
Asshole.
The book is good. The book is real good.
Right. Now you can take those along with you when you travel. And do crosswords.
Oh, this is huge.
Yeah.
This was so much better than the $20.
Fucking idiot. No, it's not. All right. As we close this out, what are you excited to talk about? What do you got coming up next, Austin? What do you got coming up next?
Coming up next, we're working on Around the Corner together. Mm-hmm. I've got a short film that I'm very excited about, kind of a different style than other stuff I've worked on ever. Very excited about that. And yeah, I guess working on some new writing. We're finishing up my second feature length screenplay.
Nice.
And yeah, whatever comes my way.
Hell yeah. One last thing. Any advice for the young Austin Abbotts of the world? What would you say to them?
Okay. My most serious advice if you're working a job at the Woodbury Commons, bring a lunch.
Dead ass. Yeah.
I went to Subway so much for years.
It's Jersey Mike's now.
For years. Mm-hmm. Subway sucks ass. I was eating there every day, spending thousands of dollars over the course of my time there. Bring a lunch, save the money, put it towards the project that you're working on. Don't go to Subway. Make a sandwich. That's my advice.
That's real. That was real. And on that note, my advice to anybody out there, like and subscribe, you fucking dickheads. And follow us on Instagram, please. I don't want a day job. Didn't you just hear me complain about that for the last 2 hours? I'm just kidding. Thank you all for tuning in. Thank you to Austin. Thank you for coming on. Thanks for the book.
Yeah. Another quarter.
Read it. Shout out to Spencer. Shout out to Kale for being our sound mixer. And as always, we'll see you next time. And again, if you haven't followed us on Instagram yet, if you haven't subscribed to us on YouTube, please do.
Just
do it. If
you'd
like to. If you want to. No pressure. I don't care anymore. All right. Later.
Peace.
Boom.
That was great.
Cut me up.
Cut me up. You can cut that, Kale.
Cut my balls.
If you just press the stop.